My name is Lourdes Torre. I'm born and raised here in the South Bronx. I serve as the grants officer at Hostos and actually came in January of 1987. So I've just completed 30 years. I came to Hostos as the director of adult basic education. But I was only in that position for about 6 months or 8 months. And then I went to work for the newly appointed president at that time, Dr. Isaura Santiago Santiago. And I became her executive assistant. And I worked for her for most of her time here at the college. Doing many things, executive assistants do many things. the important thing for me at that time was that I was serving under the first Puerto Rican woman president in CUNY. And that was a monumental event we had. And I dare say that she was the first Puerto Rican woman president in the U.S. I'll have to check that fact, but I think that is so. And it was, you know, it was an honor and a privilege for me to serve under her and to be a part of Hostos, because, you know, Hostos was and continues to be the shining light at the end of the tunnel for so many people. Hostos is, I always think about Hostos and, you know, Hostos and hope. Hostos was the hope of so many individuals, generations. 30 years ago for the Puerto Rican community here in New York. And slowly that began to change, well, to be enhanced, let's say. Then it became a symbol for all Latinos, African-American, working people, a multicultural place where you had a place, you know, where you could belong. And we know that so many, you know, so many people throughout so many years, you know, we the sociologists have all studied and have determined that belonging is such an important human nature, human factor, belonging. And Hostos was the place where you belonged. Hostos gave you a future. Hostos, and for so many people that had no hopes or dreams of ever going to college, of ever seeing, you know, seeing a future that was different from their parents, Hostos gave them the opportunity. Hostos was the opportunity for so many people, and that's why it was so important. And, you know, when I first came to Hostos, I almost came reluctantly because I was like, ay, Dios mío, you know, to just come and deal with all of that, you know, that heartache. You know, people were struggling, but, you know, shame on me, because I said I could never do what I've seen some of these students do, accomplish what they have accomplished with all the obstacles that they face daily. Me, I went to college on the SEEK program. You know, they gave me money for books and money to for transportation. And, you know, I was gifted at that point, or gifted is not the word. I was privileged. At that point, because I was able to get into those kinds of programs that were designed to help people like me, people that came from working class and poor communities. I'm one of seven kids, so you can imagine. and my father was the only one that worked. My mother never worked. But That's what I did. So when I went to college, I had to go to school, you know, I went to college and not with the grace of God and the Sikh program, I got my degree, you know, and they were able to support me. But students that I was seeing in 1987, 88, 89, that whole period in the 90s, you know, they had amazing kinds of obstacles and things to deal with that I could have never done it. I could have never done it worrying about my children, having a job because I needed to have a job, go to work because who's going to support me and who's going to, you know, dealing with abusive husbands, dealing with, you know, my kids are in gangs, my kids are going to jail, or my boyfriend is in jail or just got busted, or, I mean, you know, so many things that don't even have a place to live. I'm a homeless student. We have many homeless students, and, you know, and I remember back then, sometimes people didn't even know, you know, like, but at Hostos, you found out because a professor asked, you know, and would say, did you know the student was homeless? Did you know the student? These students come to class every day and without breakfast, without lunch, they go through the whole day tomando café because that's all they could get, because that's all they had in their pocket. Was a token at that time, you know, a token was how you got on the subway. But that's how they lived every day. But they were here. They were here because, why were they here? They were here because they realized that this was going to help them get out of this life that they were in right now. So that's why, so while I came reluctant, I could see very quickly that Hostos was the dream come true for so many Latinos, African Americans, poor people that had no option, no other option. And that's why Hostos, you know, is so important. You know, Hostos didn't, it wasn't just like, and I'm sure you've heard this before, but, you know, people fought for this place to be here. People didn't, the City University of New York did not just decide one day, oh, let's put this little college over there on 149th Street and the Grand Concourse. You know, those people, they could use an education. Nope, not how it happened. And so that's all, you know, a very long story how a unity among educators and students and elected officials and community residents gave birth to Hostos, said, yes, there is a need. And through a very long struggle, this place was established some 50 years ago.
So talk about all of the different responsibilities you've had here, first as an executive assistant, well, first as the director of the higher education or continuing education, mm-hmm. that equivalent, right?
Yeah, it was the director of adult basic education. And as I said, it was just for a short time, but it was how I came to Hostos. It was in January of 1987. Mm-hmm. And that's how I came. And it was to help to design and implement programs for adults who had left school, didn't graduate high school, you know, maybe did graduate high school, but that was it after that. People that, again, people that had no idea that college was even an option. And so this was a community-based program, free to the public, received government funds from Albany to provide GED, ESL, English as a second language classes, and adult basic education in mathematics and reading for community residents.
But that's huge. I mean, because then that became like very important, right? A part of the college.
Well, it was the very beginning of what now is a major aspect of our college, which is the Division of Continuing Education and Workforce Development. That was the very beginning with some small programs that, you know, that people have built and developed into this major division that serves now some 6,000 or 7,000 people. You know, it started with this little program, but an important aspect, because not everybody could come to Hostos, be a full-time student, take classes, etc., but could find time to come to begin an idea of, hey, I need to get my high school diploma. I need to learn English. I need to do something to begin a process. I mean, you know, you didn't think of it then, but they were like, I need un cambio. Necesito un mejor trabajo. Sorry, I'm going into English and Spanish, pero es así.
So then from there,
I went to work for Dr. Isauro Santiago. And as I said, there I did many, many things. And, you know, I came as what we call a higher education officer. I started out, obviously, as a HEO assistant, HEO associate, and until I became a full HEO. But working with Dr. Santiago, as I said, was an honor and a privilege for me because I learned so much from her. But, you know, my work as an administrator was very important, certainly my career. You know, that's kind of what I did. That's what they paid me for. Mm-hmm. But there's another aspect of our work here at Hostos that can never be compensated, only in the joy that you feel when you see change. And being here at Hostos, allowed me to have impact on major things that were happening in our communities, because Hostos was involved as an institution, and that is part of our role, and that has been part of our role throughout our history, throughout our 50 years, is how do we best connect with what's going on in the community? How do we contribute to changing those realities? How do we impact the very lives of not just our students, but their parents and their children, even though they're not here as students? And so for me, the biggest, I think one of the most important struggles that Hostos was involved in was the struggle for bilingual education. We were the only institution of higher education that offered bilingual education. What does that mean? It meant that I didn't speak any English, but I could come begin a college degree-bearing program in Spanish. And that's not to say I didn't want to learn English. Of course I want to learn English, because we all know that that's the gateway. We all know that. But I could begin my college credits in whatever it was, sociology, psychology, criminal justice. I could begin taking college credit-bearing courses in Spanish while at the same time I studied English as a second language. That was huge.
That is huge.
That is still huge.
That's what we should be.
Right. And sometimes people say, ay, ya no hay necesidad de eso. I personally don't believe that, but I also believe that, yes, things change and we have to move forward, but I still believe that there is a need for that. And so that was monumental.
Distinguished itself.
And that put us on a plane, yes, all by ourselves, because I think there was one other place in Arizona. Maybe it was Las Cruces or New Mexico. I'm not sure right now. My memory fails me.
Somewhere
I'm older.
But over there.
Yeah, where there was one other school that was beginning, that was had a bilingual mission, which was, you know, what it boils down to. We had a bilingual education mission to provide education, college level education in both languages. Unheard of. So as a result of that, which is, you know, again, why it was critical when Dr. Santiago came to Osos, because she was a leading practitioner, researcher, noted scholar in the field of bilingual education. And damn, I wanted to be a part of that. I studied bilingual education. My graduate degree is in bilingual education. So, you know, being a part of that was truly, you know, truly an honor, and I learned tremendous amounts. So I think that was major. At the same time, you know, in the 80s, in the 90s, we were still struggling with education as a civil right. Education as a right for all people. It doesn't matter if you spoke English, Spanish, Greek, French, you know, Swahili. Education's a right. And we needed to continue to move that forward to guarantee that right. I won't say it that way. You know, it's not that we were just an educational institution. I believe that an educational institution has many aspects and plays a very serious role, as Ostos did in this community, in securing the rights for people, the right to an education, the right to housing, the right to medical care, health care, you know, the right to live peacefully, the right to live free of violence. I mean, we were involved in much of that, you know, and I remember, I'm going to just tell this story really quickly because I don't think it's ever been told, but a lot of people were involved in this story. I remember a woman by the name of Linda Chavez was invited to speak at Ostos. And, you know, we're an institution and people like this come, and this is a woman who had just published the book, Out of the Barrio, I think it was called. And she had just published a book where she said that the main problem in the city was the fact that Puerto Rican women came from Puerto Rico to get on welfare, to receive public assistance, and que no valían nada, you know, that they were worthless, and Latinas in general. And that was the cause of all the problems that we were having in the city. So I said, pero ¿cómo es posible? Entonces la vamos a traer a Osto para que hable esa basura, right? So that she could, this is her way of educating. And so, of course, you know, I said, no, we can't have that. And so, yeah, so I'm a tell it, right? So we organized against her coming here to speak. And of course, she had been invited by a professor who, while he talked about this, oh, free speech, you know, we're an institution, he had clearly other motives. And we had other motives too. And we said, no, we cannot allow a person like this to come and speak at this institution, an institution who its very existence contradicts anything that she could say. I mean, so clearly, she was wrong, because look at what we have. Look at Ostos. And at that point, you know, there was over 80% of our population was women, was females struggling, succeeding, moving forward, changing their lives. Y esta mujer no va a venir a decir que we are the problems in our community? No. So we had...
una pela ahí mismo.
Bueno, ella se salvó de una pela. Ella se salvó de una pela because she came and she could hardly even get out of the car. We would not even let her out of the car. And the car drove around to the back entrance of the building, and there was students waiting for her there. She was not going to be allowed to speak here because we were not going to listen to this, you know, this negativity, listen to these lies, blaming us for our problems when we knew very clearly that we were not to blame. And so through that process, we educated so many students to understand, you know, we don't choose poverty. We don't choose racism. We don't choose sexism. We don't choose these conditions that we live in. There's certainly other forces that create that for us and, you know, that we continue to fight. And, you know, I was just at this, I was just at the teach-in that we're having today because, you know, so many of the same problems still exist today. And, you know, we talk a lot about immigration today. And, you know, back when I started here, that was the beginning of all of that. You know, we had so many Dominican students coming and African students and students from Central America. And, I mean, it was just the beginning of all of that. And Hostos was here for them and continues to be here for them. And we are a sanctuary college and we will not, you know, I certainly won't allow those ICE people to come on our campus.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's a horrible thing. And that's what I was starting to say, that institutionalized racism continues. And I was going to say it started back then when I started here, but it was goes way past that, way beyond, way before that, but continues today. And that makes me very sad. I mean, I'm certainly not ignorant of those things, and I don't want to treat it lightly. Saying that I feel sad, it just, you know, it makes me sad that there are people in our country that teach their children to be racist, because that's a learned behavior.
Yeah. Or ignorant.
Well, there are those that are ignorant, but then there are those that choose to be ignorant. That even when you know, it's like Linda Chavez, we showed her this institution and all of the beauty of this institution, and she refused to accept that as reality. I mean, it's right here in 3D, people. Mm-hmm. But she refused to accept that, you know, that we were making it up. But regardless, you know, and so I think that...
The mission of Hostos is the bilingualism, that root is super... It has evolved, but it's been very important.
Yeah, and personally important to me. And that's why I think I've stayed here this long. Because, you know, I truly do believe in bilingual education. And I truly do believe, you know, as a pedagogy, I think it's effective. And I think, you know, we figure out how to do it, but in principle, and the fact that that still continues to be a part of our mission is important to me. Educating the poor and working communities of our city, also a very important part of our mission, and to me as well personally, to be a part of that movement has been, you know, my life, essentially. She was a pioneer. She was the first of her kind. It was just not, you know, I don't want to say, well, maybe I do want to say, you know, unfortunately, I think that even in our own community, there was a little bit of jealousy and How would I categorize it? But even we ourselves, I think, as a community, did not support her as we needed to support her, regardless of whatever mistakes or not. I mean, damn it, she was the first of her kind. And, you know, it's like nobody is born knowing how to be a president of an institution. I remember I remember she said that to me once. It must have been my second day. And I said, you know, President Santiago, I'm honored to be your executive assistant, but, you know, I'm not sure I know exactly what you want me to do. And she said, don't worry about it. I've never been a college president. We're starting out together. So that was kind of a little funny anecdote. But I think that she was treated unfairly. I think when, you know, the way we deal with that then and now is we start telling lies about people. And we start making up stories. And it's difficult to, even when you have the evidence in a box in the trunk of your car, it's difficult to find support. And I think that, you know, I think that we as a community could have been more supportive of her. And I'll leave it at that. But she was she continues to be an amazing woman. And I will always be grateful to have had the opportunity to work with her. I mean, it's funny, just before I came to Hostos, or a little bit before, I was one of the, coming to Hostos, I was not sure, but then I just embraced it because I had been working in this community. One of the principal organizers of the Committee Against Fort Apache, and I'm sure you remember that was Elba all about.
Elba talked to me about that a lot.
And so Elba was involved with that too, and so many people, but Hostos was involved in that struggle. And when you talk about, you know, the misrepresentation, I mean, I remember we used to say, you know, it's amazing. If they made 100 movies in 1 year about Puerto Ricans, okay, so you could dismiss this comment about, well, it's just a movie, forget about it, and let's move on. No, but since they didn't make 100 movies a year about Puerto Ricans, they made one that showed us as pimps, prostitutes, drug addicts, professionals that had drug habits. You know, it's just, it serves to create the image of that community everywhere in the world. And so, yo soy de Puerto Rico. Ah, pues tú eres drogadicta o prostituta o whatever. And, you know, it was a major struggle. I mean, we closed down the movie theater. But the point is that it helped to serve to educate this community about issues that were just beginning to emerge, about media racism, about the images that were being created about us, the images that the world would see of us, always negative. And we had so many positive things happening. And Hostos was involved in that struggle, because it was one of the most positive things that was happening in this community. I remember Hostos with a big banner on 149th Street when Paul Newman was in his car and trying to get out to film a scene. And we said, no, you can't get out here. You're going to have to take your car and move it through this crowd and vete. And Elba Cabrera and her sister, Dr. Evelina Antonetti, who was always will be a mentor of mine. And
you know her?
I did know her, and I worked with her for several years. Just before I came to Hostos, I was working with United Bronx Parents, and
wow.
It was amazing. But so the media racism,
the media
stuff,
and how we ourselves,
and it continues. Yes, we ourselves perpetuate those stereotypes, and we ourselves.
TV channels are very powerful in what they put
and,
out there.
And why is that? And why is that? It's because it's about making money.
But
this is ourselves. And then they complain. It's like,
because
well, we
have these differences in our community, right?
You're doing it.
I mean, Isaura Santiago was betrayed.
Yeah.
Let's say it like it was. Isaura Santiago was betrayed by members of our own community. And so, eso pasa. Y no hemos, todavía no hemos superado eso. Todavía no hemos visto eso y decir, no podemos seguir así. Porque tú te haces cinco pesos más que yo. Because that's really what it boils down to. It's not like a big deal. Pero así nos tienen. That's, you know, I mean, that's part of what colonialism is. And always constantly seeing yourself as inferior. Constantly seeing yourself as, you know, yo puedo llegar hasta cierto punto, pero después de ahí, and that's not so. Yeah. We've had CEOs and presidents of colleges, and, you know, I mean, it's just not so.
Yeah.
And we have to continue to put forward those examples. And we do that here at Hostos. It's one of the reasons why I admire so much Nidia Edgecombe's work with her alumni. She is constantly putting out there our alumni who are going to the Ivy League schools and heads of companies and, you know, working in information technology and doctors and lawyers. And I just, and that's what we have to continue to do. That's what Hostos stands for. You know, like you asked me, you know, all of those things that I shared, you know, Hostos' impact in the Bronx. It's been major. For all of those reasons. But if I can think about what does the future hold for Hostos, right? And for our students. You know, one of the things we constantly doing here is always, you know, implement, revisit, revise, implement, revisit, revise. You know, constantly changing our approach, what we do with students, because, you know, the demographics change, our students change, they come with different needs. And for me, helping to support faculty with their research about our students, research on our students, research on how to improve teaching and learning, you know, that's pretty much what I've devoted myself here at Hostos in terms of my paid job. Is to help faculty raise funds for their research so that they can impact the teaching and learning process and implement, revise, revisit, and implement again, you know? So I think that for the future, that we have to hold on to that as a strategy. We have to hold on to that, como lo digo, approach, consciousness of it all goes back to our students. You know, when in doubt, go back to what our students, you know, what are the needs of our students? You know, working with Dr. Santiago was amazing, and I began to do that. But I met Wally because Wally reported to Dr. Santiago. And when I met Wally, we immediately connected. And, you know, at first you always say, ese gringo. And boy, I bite my tongue on that one now, because I have not known anyone other than Wally here at Hostos with the level of commitment. And first of all, he's a genius. And his all of his work is intentional. He doesn't do something just because, ay, sí, porque eso le va a gustar. No. He has a purpose. And Wally's purpose in establishing the, what's called the Arts and Culture Program, that is now the Hostos Center for the Arts and Culture. Wally's purpose was, how do I connect what happens in the classroom with what happens in people's lives? How do we make that connection? And we make that connection by celebrating their life, by celebrating their culture, by making their culture relevant, because sometimes we think, ay, no, que eso no sirve. Que the fact that, you know, you have to speak English here in this country, that speaking Spanish is not what you need to do. I mean, I grew up in a family of 7 kids, and all of us spoke Spanish. And not because my father went to second grade. But he came to this country and he taught himself how to read and write in English as well as in Spanish. But for Wally, it was like, yes, we need to celebrate those things. And we need to celebrate those Puerto Ricans because, man, they got so much love, so much richness in their culture. But they're not the only ones here. We need to find the way to celebrate the Dominican community, the Mexican community, the African-American community, the Peruvian community. Wally, I'm telling you, he's a genius. Wally understood that is how you're going to connect Hostos with the community, the classroom with people's lives, that unless you make that connection, and that is, again, one of the things why Hostos has been so successful, unless you make that connection for people, people would just come here, take a class, and be done. But that's not what Hostos is about. It's about celebrating, about inclusion, and we use that word, you know, so much these days. But no, true inclusion is integrating people's lives with what they're learning in the classroom. That's what inclusion is. And so when you celebrate people's culture and the richness that they bring to this country and the richness that has developed in this country, because it's, you know, that's a Puerto Rican thing, but, you know, we always talk about lo de allá y lo de acá. Pero y lo de acá, while we have so many, while we've taken so much de allá, for ourselves, we still have developed so many things that are just ours, you know? And Wally found the way through performance art and visual art and, I mean, through music and dance and art and ceramica and exhibitions and baile. I mean, so many things. Every genre of our culture has been displayed here at Hostos. Everything from film to, I mean, just everything. And Wally did it. Wally did it. Others now have continued because, you know, llegó hasta cierto punto, but I think people that would not necessarily have a relationship with Hostos had a relationship with Hostos through Wally, because they said, muchacho. You know, what his impact on Hostos, his impact on this community. I mean, Wally is respected nationally and internationally in the field of arts presentation, management, you know, and all of that because he made that connection with the higher education and the arts and culture. And it's not just something that you give lip service to. It's something that you create and you live. And that's what Wally did. That's why Wally, you know, the culture and arts program was not just about presenting a few concerts a year. No. Again, it was taking all of the cultural representations of all the people that were here, faculty and staff and students, and saying, this is good. And let's show it. And let's showcase it. And let's invite the world to see it. That little school there on the Grand Conquest and 149th Street, they know who we are in Madrid. They know who we are in La Habana, in San Juan, or in Orocovi, Cajacita Chiquito. And that was because of Wally. His vision, you know, it's just hard to say, but I mean, he was not an educator, right? Wally was educated as a journalist. Wally was a writer, did that good too. But his vision of how to support, yes, and his perspective, definitely. But his vision of how is it that I can support, how is it that we support the teaching and learning process by celebrating the cultures of the people that are doing that work. And I don't think anybody else, I mean, I don't know. I guess I try to think about other institutions that I have relationships with that nobody's done what he did. And, you know, all I could do is hope that we continue that we continue that process, that the Osso Center, you know, is a landmark, it really does distinguish us. And Wally Edgecombe distinguishes us. Wherever he goes, the second word out of his mouth is Osos Community College. I've seen him. I listened to him. I've learned so much from him. So much. And he's my friend. And I'm proud to call him my friend, for sure. Pero just an important aspect of Osos' history, critical, is that connection between the culture and arts. And the instructional program, critical aspect. And Wally did that. The faculty at Hostos are, you know, I don't want to use the cliche word of unique, but there is an element, and I think that's what you're trying to find. What is it in the faculty of Hostos that make them one, you know, make them the faculty, that body? There's something. There is something because, and, you know, and I have seen some come and go. And I have seen, you know, faculty who I've said, wow, I'm so sorry to see that person go, you know. But for whatever reason, they got a better job. They didn't like teaching. And most of the times it's that. You know, because it takes a special person to work with our population. I'm not saying that our students are weird or anything, but our students require a certain type of
sensitivity.
Individual. But it's not just the sensitivity. It's feeling that person is in for the long haul with me. That person, I'm the student. That person is here to stay. And if they're not, they go quickly. It's not like they're here 10 years and then they go. No. The faculty are here, and the minute they have to start putting together their 10-year portfolio, they're gone. If they don't match, if they're not a part of it. So for me, working with the faculty has been an amazing experience. I've learned a great deal. You know, you read chemistry proposals and humanities proposals, and you learn. Obviously, you learn about those fields. But faculty are always looking to see, how does this project that I'm going to do now have an impact on what I do in the classroom? You know, people do a lot of research, and some of them, you know, do research that may not be related, but you know what? Somehow or other, it becomes related. Mm-hmm. And people's lives, you know, just like you say, well, you know, I'm a scholar on Harriet Beecher Stowe. Okay, but how do I integrate that? How do I make that a part of, I don't teach English, or, you know, I'm a math teacher. I teach mathematics. Well, you know what? There is a connection, and they find that connection. And they, you know, so that their life becomes, I shouldn't say this, but also becomes their life. And that's really what it is. I never said that before quite like that, but Ostos is part of their life, not just part, just Ostos becomes their life. Ostos becomes their mission. Ostos becomes their vision. Ostos, you know, for them, our students are why they do what they do every day. And yeah, they go on vacation, they do this, they do that, but there's that element deep within them.
I agree.
And sometimes it's not obvious. And even the ones that I disagree with, I respect, even though we disagree, because we all, nobody can agree on everything. But there are some that I disagree on how they might approach. But I respect them because they care about our students. And that is not true everywhere you go. It's just not true. And we have an amazing, talented faculty. People in all walks of life. I mean, all disciplines, what I wanted to say. People who have, who are committed not just to the teaching and learning process, but to enhancing that. People are committed to research. People that are being honored and distinguished throughout the world. And I used to think, sometimes I used to say, well, why do they want to be here? And asking that question, looking for the answer to that question has helped me to learn about faculty, about individuals, about professors here on campus. Because, yeah, it may not be obvious why they want to be here, but you need to look within. And then you get to know why. Why they don't want to be anywhere else. Why they need to be here. And how, you know, as a body together, they make a difference for our students. Some people say, "Ay, Virgen." I say, "Ay, Virgen." Because they're remarkable. They're remarkable. There's always one or two. You know, but for the most part, but like I said, people that that don't engage with their colleagues, and they're not here for very long. They might be good. They go on and they do great things. Yep, I applaud them. But here together, our faculty, our unique body, they're a unique body. And, you know, they don't look for recognition. They just do what they got to do every day. They need more support. They don't get enough support. I worry about the young ones, you know, just getting started, where they ask to do so many things. And it's most of the time the first time they're doing any of that stuff, you know, portfolios and instructional plans and observing other faculty and having, you know, and writing evaluations. And they may not be asked to have done that before, but they know what they're doing when it comes to that classroom and meeting the needs of our students. It takes a village. It's it.